Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today we have the amazing Laura Roeder of Edgar, and she'll be sharing her story how she managed to create a super personal, super interesting brand. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Jane.
Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
So for those who don't know you, even though Edgar has been shining all over the internet over the last few years, please share what Edgar does and how you ended up creating this piece of software. What's your backstory?
Yeah, so I'm the founder of Edgar, and Edgar is social media software to get more visibility for your content, to leverage and distribute your content on social. A lot of people spend a lot of time writing a blog post, they send it out once on social, and then never again. So Edgar solves that problem by loading up a library of all your updates and then repeating them automatically for you, so that when you write a great evergreen blog post about UI, for example, something timeless, Edgar will just keep sending it out in a month and then 3 months and 6 months. So you're making sure to keep driving traffic to that great piece of content. And the story of how I created Edgar, so I've been in the social media space for about as long as it's been around, and I've had a social media marketing training company since 2009, and we launched Edgar in 2014 really because we wanted to make software that solved some of our own problems. You know, we were teaching a methodology of saving your content and repeating it and putting it into categories, which is also how Edgar thinks about social, and I felt really frustrated with all the manual labor that I still had to do with the tools that I was paying for. So my husband is a Ruby on Rails developer, so he built the first version of the tool. We launched in July 2014, and now it's like a whole real business with 17 people.
Amazing. So you're totally non-technical founder, or what was your role in relation to your husband?
Yeah, I'm a non-technical founder. So my background is in marketing. So I've been in charge of the marketing for Edgar and also all the business side. So my husband really just built the software, and he's now CTO and oversees the technical team. I do all the rest of the business or oversee it. Other people actually do it.
Amazing. Could you share some biggest challenges that rose on your way to the famous place where you are now with Edgar?
Mm-hmm. I had to learn so much. So I had never, I had never run a software company before. I had been doing training, which is a very different business model. So the lessons that I learned in marketing really applied, and I was able to do the marketing really well. But just the nature of software was sort of foreign to me. You know, something that I didn't really understand was that sometimes in software, you can spend many months going down a road and then decide that, it didn't work out the way you thought it would, or you come up with a better strategy. And sometimes you just have to get rid of that work. And in training, you just create a course, it's kind of done or it isn't. You know, you don't spend months and months creating a course and then like scrap it and start over. That would be that would be horrible. But that's just something that happens sometimes in software, and also just the complexity of it. You know, I'm still understanding, well, okay, we can't just make this one small tweak here, because if we were to do that, that would actually have to change the algorithm for how we decide what content goes out when, and that would affect all these other parts of the app. So it's a much more complex product than I've dealt with before.
Since we are here on UI Breakfast Podcast managing, talking about design, I would love to hear your story, your relationship with the design part of mm-hmm. things. First, let's talk about UX, whether you changed your interface a lot, whether you like dramatically dumped features, and maybe some examples for our listeners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So actually I used to be a web designer when I first started working for myself in 2007. But my knowledge is extremely out of date. So when I was doing web design, when I learned, it was just like making tables in HTML, is how you would do layouts, and then you would do the layout in CSS. But when I was around, like WordPress was just starting to be a thing, but I never learned PHP. I only knew HTML, CSS. So I have a bit of a design background, but like I used to have a design background, I think is the most accurate way to say it. And yeah, as far as our UX and features, I mean, we're very focused on not being a little bit for everyone kind of tool. We do what we do really well. And we actually try not to add on many new features at all. And in functionality, our software is very, very similar to when we launched. But we have made some changes, a lot of it based on our user feedback. So one big change we made is in how we show the calendar. So a lot of people, I actually see other social media apps advertising like a visual marketing calendar as one of their features, which we also have, but we actually don't advertise it. Maybe we should. You know, we used to have more of a list model, but the way that our schedule looks now, we actually got a huge inspiration, you know, or knockoff, whatever you want to call it, from Google Calendar, because we're like, it's how do we display all this complex information, because we're showing across the whole week all these different time slots, you know, different categories, different social accounts. And Google Calendar was really the best example we could think of a really great interface for displaying, you know, date and time, complicated information in a really great way. So that was our inspiration. We made it a visual calendar layout instead of a list layout, and our customers absolutely loved it. And when I demo the tool to someone, I always get like, oh, that's really cool. I really love that when we go to that part of it.
That's amazing to hear. So you still do personal walkthrough demos for your customers?
I mean, our customer service team does a weekly demo every week. And I do them every so often because it's a really good way to stay connected to the tool. I just need to make sure as the founder, because I'm actually not in our tool that much because we have a team that runs our social media accounts. We're actually switching over now for me to run one of my accounts myself using Edgar, just so like I can make sure to be in there every day and be really intimately familiar. But yeah, I think it's a great idea for founders to do demos at least every so often, so that you make sure that you have the most up-to-date information about your own software.
Absolutely. That's a great practice. Now let's shift from UX to branding. You have an amazing brand, which should be like an example brand for people who are trying to do something personal on the web. So how did you come up with this wonderful octopus? And tell me more about it.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. So when we launched Edgar, first of all, everyone asks, you know, why is it or he called Edgar? We like to call Edgar him instead of it. So Edgar was a code name that we were using for the project before we knew it would be a business, you know, before we knew it would be a real thing. And when it came time to name the software, we literally couldn't think of anything better. You know, we were thinking of these names like social distributor and just kind of really boring stuff. And we're like, oh, we don't want a boring name. Maybe we'll just call it Edgar. People seem to remember that. So that's where the name came from. And because we had a person's name, it was just sort of an obvious extension to have more fun with our branding. So since it's a person's name, we just started thinking, you know, who is Edgar? What are his qualities? What is he like? And so at the time, the team was the training business. So this business wasn't started from zero. We had a smaller team, like 5 or 6 people in the training business. Then we kind of transitioned that team over to the software business. So I did have a group of people and a really great designer and a really great writer to brainstorm with. So as a group, we were just saying all this really off the wall stuff. Like we were picturing a hotel bellman in like an old creepy hotel who has this huge library of all your social media updates. We were just talking about kind of like different visual metaphors for the brand. And that evolved mostly due to our copywriter, Tom Van Buren. That evolved to this character of Edgar that he kind of has in his imagination and now has been fleshed out through all the branding that he's done and emails that he's written, and through Julie, who created our initial logo and whole visual look. So, you know, I think a lot of companies could have a lot more fun than they do. Edgar is really quirky, really irreverent. We put a lot of just weird jokes in our branding materials. Like I said, we always call it Edgar He. And because of that, our customers have done the same. And when they write reviews, they actually started writing Edgar is my boyfriend so often that we made Edgar is my boyfriend stickers. started sending them out. And, you know, we all have to use software for our business. You know, social media software is not the most exciting thing in the world. It's very functional for your business. So we just figure, why not make people smile? Why not have a little fun with it?
So we should all say thanks to Tom for introducing that language for, yes, for Edgar, because this language is amazing. It's all way down to, I don't know, job descriptions or something.
Well, no, we do. And actually, that's something I haven't seen many other companies do. We put branding everywhere. And actually, Tom, every job description that we write, the last step is for Tom to go through it. And we'll just assign him, like, Edgar it up. And he puts little Edgar references in. He makes it more fun. He puts little jokes in. And we get a great response from people saying that our job application kind of lets people know the brand and the vibe of the company.
How has your hiring experience been so far? So you're quite a large team, as you know, by startup, bootstrap startups, at least. I don't know what exactly your situation was funding. Have you got funding or are you bootstrapped?
So I think the most accurate way to say it is self-funded. We have not raised any money, but we did use profits from the previous training business to get us started. So we are bootstrapped, but bootstrapping, you know, usually implies that you started with literally $0. You know, you got in $10 when you spent $10, you got in $100, you spent $100. So we were in a little bit different situation there. We did have a little money to start off with, but the company has grown very organically. And the way we hire is very much a bootstrap type of hiring. You know, we're a SaaS business. We get revenue in on a regular basis every day and every month. So we grow our customer base, we hire more people. We grow our customer base, we hire more people.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder, what's your approach? Do you hire when it hurts, or do you have like a little bit wiggle room for each person?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely been a struggle. So we're a distributed team. Like I said, we're 17 people now, and we're growing quickly. And, you know, looking at last year, the biggest mistake that we made was being too behind in hiring too slowly, and waiting until it became a pain point, because it takes us a long time to hire. We're extremely picky about who we bring onto the team. So we found that most roles usually take 2 to 3 months from when the job listing first goes live to when we have someone, you know, starting their first day on the company, at the company. And we never think it's going to take that long. We're like, not this one, like this, you know, this one we'll be able to get in the month. And we're always wrong. So, a way we've tackled that this year is we did make really detailed forecasts and hiring plans, for each month of the year. So now we do have a plan for the rest of 2016, you know, who needs to be brought on the team at every month. I mean, a lot of it is a guess, but that's just kind of all you can do. And then we look 3 months ahead. Okay, do we have the job listing up for this position? So now we're much more in the philosophy of, yeah, hire before it hurts, or at least start hiring before it hurts. And like, we just had someone leave the company, you know, which happens every so often. And we're such a small team that having one person leave can really leave a huge hole, and it just shows you why it's better to get people, you know, to start a little bit early so that you're not stuck in this desperate situation when someone leaves.
Absolutely. Could you share a few insider, you know, stories or ways how you manage such a kind of team? How do you keep the team spirits up? What's your, you know, logic and philosophy behind that?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we think about a lot. What's really weird about a distributed team is that even when you're small, there are some people that don't really have an opportunity to connect. You know, in a real office with 17 people, you would know everyone. You would probably occasionally have lunch or coffee with everyone. On our team, someone who writes marketing copy and someone who's a back-end developer often don't have any reason to interact. So we're really deliberate about making those interactions happen. So, I mean, the first big thing is that we do meet up in person twice a year. We were doing once a year. This is the first time we've done twice a year. So we do a week-long retreat where everyone comes out. We're also experimenting with doing more smaller meetups, especially around conferences. You know, finding a conference that a Ruby on Rails conference that our dev team wants to go to, or customer service conference for our CS team to go to, and having smaller meetups that way. And, you know, we're on Slack like most companies are, having fun. We do question of the day. This morning's question of the day was, what's your favorite condiment? And that led to a very lively discussion. So we do little things like that to stay connected too.
That sounds great. So since your business is in marketing and you have grown a company from small size to big success, what's your approach to marketing and what's your best advice for people who are starting up from scratch?
So, I mean, we've done our marketing pretty different than a lot of SaaS companies. The biggest thing that we do different is that we do not have a free trial, which is pretty unusual for SaaS. We really wanted to differentiate ourselves as a business tool. So we don't have a free trial. We also don't have any kind of like freemium model. Also because we're bootstrapped, you know, we can't really afford to support free users. So we're just like, it's $49 a month. If you think it's going to be valuable for your business, buy it. You know, we'll give you a refund if you don't like it. We've kind of looked more at doing refunds rather than doing trials. Also from a marketing perspective, I'm a huge believer in building an email list. So our call to action on our homepage is to give us your email address if you're interested rather than, you know, just to buy or to do a free trial as a lot of companies do. And that's worked really well. I think because an email address is a really easy ask, you know, as a prospect, it's an easy way for me to say, you know, I'm interested in this. Maybe I'm not sure if I want to buy it yet, but like if I give them my email, I'll stay reminded of it. Where the problem with a free trial is that as a prospect, you're often not ready for a free trial. I mean, a free trial is very time intensive from the customer's perspective. And if a free trial is your only option for kind of staying in touch with the software, you might choose to do the free trial. You know, we've all had that experience where it ends before we ever have time to get it set up. And then we try to log in again and it's just like, no, your free trial's over. And that's kind of annoying. So yeah, we're all about using social media marketing, content marketing to build a list, and then communicating with our list for the buying part of the interaction.
Yeah, that seems a very wise strategy to go for a low friction content marketing first. Mm-hmm. So what kind of content would you educate those people on? What would you send them out so they don't get overwhelmed with the amount, but also stay in touch with your brand?
Mm-hmm. So we blog once a week. We're actually experimenting with twice a week. Last week was the first week we did it, so we'll see how that goes. But we have been blogging once a week, and then we send out an email newsletter every Wednesday with some little tidbits and a link to our latest blog post. So that's our general kind of content marketing pace. Something that's really interesting to me is that we see the highest traffic to our blog by far on Wednesdays when we're sending out the link in the email newsletter. And a lot of people, I think in software now, the trend is maybe to go a little more away from email marketing. And I think a lot of people don't really realize the importance of that. They're like, well, yeah, you're sending traffic, but you already have those people on your list anyway. But what it shows me is that those people need the reminder to go, right? Like, we know that these people already know about our blog because they've signed up for our newsletter. They've seen our blog before. It just goes to show, even though they know about our blog, they're not taking the time to visit until we send them an email saying, hey, visit the blog. It has something that you might want to read, right? Because people don't have time to just check our blog every day, seeing when something's new. They're busy. And a lot of companies, I think, are a little too shy about, you know, making really specific call to actions, like read the blog today, here's the new post, or like, here's the white paper that you downloaded, I'm going to send you another reminder in 3 days with a little excerpt from it and saying, no, you should actually download it and read it now. You'll find it really helpful. You know, we create this content for a reason. We don't create it unless it's going to help people. So we want to do all we can to get people to actually check out that content.
Are there any fun formats that you've been using on your blog? Do you prefer to do interviews? Do you just do educational articles? Anything that's worked best for you?
We do a mix of kind of more like how-to and very social media specific articles mixed in with more like entrepreneurship type of topics. And we see both of those sides do really well. So I think our most traffic post of all time is about a change to Facebook's algorithm where we outlined, you know, Facebook made this change, here's how it affects you, here's what you need to do. So that one is a very specific how-to social post. One of our other biggest posts of all time was about eliminating goals at our company. So that has nothing to do with social media. It's more on the how we run our company side. So we try to do an even mix of both of those types of content.
That's great. As a marketer myself, would you mind sharing some numbers? I'm definitely interested in the size of your list, and mm-hmm. if that's not confidential, and also some metrics that you can show us to illustrate your spectacular growth over the last few years.
Yeah, so we launched in July 2014, so we're a little under 2 years old now. We have 5,000 customers. Those are all paying customers because, like I said, we don't have a free plan. So that puts us a little over 2.8 million annual reoccurring revenue.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. Congratulations. We have a pretty big,
thank you. Our list, you know, our prospect list is about 95,000 people.
Whoa. Yes, you've done it. Oh, what's your big plan on growing these numbers?
So we're huge believers in content marketing, you know, which is why, like I said, we just started experimenting with blogging twice a week because we're seeing how can we do more of what we're doing well in content. As a SaaS business, you have this constant problem of outpacing your churn. You know, what's really interesting in SaaS is if you find a way to bring in, let's say, 200 new customers a month, well, that's going to be great for a while until you grow to the size where you're churning 200 people a month, right? Because your churn rate's going to stay the same, your customer base is growing. So it's this interesting problem in SaaS marketing where you can't just do the same things and get the same amount of customers every month. You need to keep getting more customers every month. And search is actually how we get the majority of our customers. And that search ranking comes from blogging, comes from social media, comes from things like I'm doing right now, talking on a podcast. You know, there's going to be a link back to my site on the page for this podcast. So our SEO activities are really important to us because SEO is a way that you can keep putting the same sort of input in, but keep growing over time, right? Our rank can continue to rise over time and our overall amount of content that's on the web will rise over time, as opposed to something like Facebook ads, which are also a strategy that we use, but Facebook ads can't really grow exponentially, right? Facebook ads aren't just going to naturally increase over time. You have to keep putting more money in. And most companies also just find a ceiling where there's only so much audience they can reach before the advertising becomes more expensive than makes sense for their business model.
Thank you for this explicit, detailed answer. Would you mind break down your team to show how much this content marketing effort takes in terms of people as opposed to, let's say, designers or developers in your 17 people team?
Yeah, so our team is pretty evenly divided between dev, customer service, and marketing. We have a much smaller dev team than a lot of companies our size. So our marketing team right now is our head of marketing, you know, marketing manager who oversees everything. We have two full-time writers. Tom, like I mentioned, was the one who created the brand. And then now Matt is another writer. So, you know, we can't give Tom all the credit. Now it's Tom and Matt creating the brand. And then we have a full-time designer developer, well, more of a developer on our marketing team, who, you know, both like creates websites and also manages and oversees all of our statistics and metrics and getting all that set up properly and tracking. And we have a freelance designer part-time. And then we have another just part-time kind of helper on our marketing team that does various admin things, including scheduling this podcast.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So what kind of founder do you make personally? Are you the queen of your own domain here, or do you take advice from other people when making decisions?
I don't know, kind of a mix of both. I mean, I guess more than taking advice, I'm a believer in following your own way and getting inspiration from others. You know, I'm definitely a big believer in we run our own companies so that we're able to do it our way. And there's no formula for success. You know, if someone had found the way to be successful, we would all just do that. And I think it's a bit of a fantasy, you know, that you can just look at other companies and do exactly what they do, and then you'll have the success they have, because every company is different. So I definitely like to do things my own way, but I also love learning from other entrepreneurs. And I think rather than like taking direct advice, for me, it's more one, getting inspired by what they've done. You know, I love reading blogs from companies like Groove that publish, you know, what's going on behind the scenes. And I can read that and kind of think, oh, that's cool. Maybe we want to try that. Or like, oh, that's really interesting. That didn't work for them. That gives me these lessons. And I also spend a lot of time talking to other founders about what's working and not working at their company.
So how does your founder day look like as of today?
So, I mean, it's something that I've played around with a lot. So, like I said, we have a director of marketing now, which is new. He's just been here since February. So I was running marketing myself until then, but I wasn't, you know, I'm good at the strategy, but I was too busy to really put in. I wasn't doing a good job kind of, you know, managing the day-to-day, like meetings and rhythm of the team and things like that. So it's great that I have someone overseeing that. So now it's really the first time in my business that I have been a true CEO, you know, only doing that role and not doing anything hands-on. So I really try not to give myself deliverables in the business. The biggest deliverable that I have is I do promotional stuff like this interview, and sometimes other little like promotional things. I do blog sometimes on Medium as a way to kind of get my voice out there. But most of the time what I'm doing is meeting with our team leaders. We call them advocates on our team, because they advocate for their team and their topic area. So that's customer service, development, marketing, and then we have someone who does people stuff, like HR type of stuff, and some operational things too. So that's my team that are kind of my direct reports. So we all meet as a group weekly, and then I have one-on-one meetings with them every week, kind of mentoring them and giving them advice. And I'm really now the person keeping my eye on everything that's going on in the company, making sure that we're not you know, duplicating work, that we're not wasting time, and that everyone's kind of moving in the same direction.
That sounds amazing. Are you happy with the role that you assigned for yourself?
Yeah, I am. It's really fun. You know, I'm someone who really loves business. Like, I was very different than most designers. You know, I find that most designers kind of hate running the business and just wish they could just do the design. And I am not a great designer because I was always like a little bit bored by the design and I was much more interested in running the business. So yeah, the challenges of like how our team is different, you know, from 10 people versus 15 people are totally fascinating to me. So yeah, I love my role.
If you were to start from the beginning, what would you do differently?
It's an interesting question. I mean, something I would do differently. I mean, one, I would have a better idea of where we could get to. So, I mean, with this business, like I said, I never done software before. I really didn't know if it would work, which I mean, you never do. But when we launched it, we kind of thought, okay, we'll still run the training company and we'll run it alongside the software. We'll see what happens with the software. But then as I've shared the numbers, I mean, it really took off really quickly and really surpassed the training company. So if the next time, I guess I would have a little more idea of like if the pieces are in place properly, the kind of growth that can happen and maybe build even more of a team more quickly. I would also take myself out of marketing more quickly. You know, that's been a challenge for me because that's my area of expertise. So it's definitely been hard for me to let go of, but I see that I'm able to be even more valuable when I'm not so, you know, day-to-day hands-on there.
Yes, I'm so glad to hear that you actually did everything right. There are no dramatic mistakes that you made. Right?
nothing too crazy. Yeah, we haven't had those moments where it's like, and then it totally fell apart and we had to make this huge change. I mean, to give context, like I've been running businesses since 2007. You know, this is the largest business and the largest team that I've run, but I have definitely, you know, learned from a lot of experience on the way to be able to make things run so smoothly at this point.
Great. So what's your long-term vision for the product? Do you consider it mature? What's your development plan? What's your design plan?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's always kind of funny being in the social media space because I don't feel like you can make super long-term plans. It's a space that changes a lot. So, I mean, I think our longest term plan is we are very focused, like I said before, on what we do well. So what we do really, there's two things that we do really well. One is get more visibility for your content. Basically, everyone who uses Edgar increases their traffic from social to their website, often very dramatically. We often get the like 4 times increase because we do a really good job of making sure that your content is going out every day without you having to do anything. And that's the other thing we do well. You know, the big difference between our tool and other tools is you don't have to keep refilling your queue. You don't have to keep scheduling updates over and over again. You put your content into a library and then we pull it for you. Edgar pulls it for you. So those are the two things that we will keep getting better at. Especially the content is the really interesting piece to me. You know, when someone's a content marketer and they're spending time creating all this content, how can we just make sure that that content is getting the best visibility on social, that it's optimized, you know, exactly how people would want it to be right away without having to do a lot of tweaking? You know, how can we get that content into Edgar automatically without them having to do anything? So that's the kind of direction that we are growing in.
Mm-hmm. So I have two more questions for you. Maybe the not the most pleasant ones. I don't know. So first one is, how does that feel? And if you sleep well at night, relying on Twitter rules, Twitter automation practices, et cetera, et cetera. They are terrible script.
I mean, that's tough. That's really tough. And, you know, like, I'm sure I'll start more software companies in the future. And that is something that I would do differently with the next one. I would not start a company that's so reliant on outside companies that I have no control over. And, you know, every business has a supply chain in one form or the other, right? Where if you're a software company, you're depending on, you know, Heroku or Amazon Web Services or the other things that you depend on for your infrastructure. If you're a physical store, obviously you have your whole supply chain. But there are levels of risk. Our level of risk is pretty high. It's true, you know? So I don't lose sleep over it. It doesn't stress me out on a daily basis because it is what it is. You know, it's what we've chosen. But yeah, I probably would not choose that again.
And the second one, well, it's more pleasant, I promise. So there is a ton of products that make automation possible with different queues. Mm. I don't know, Buffer, Hootsuite, anyone else. How come you ended up creating this revolutionary, you know, repetitive library model? What inspired you?
So I feel like looking back through, you know, the history of social media tools. So Hootsuite was the first big one, and they're big innovation was you can schedule things to go out to multiple networks. You know, you no longer have to go into Twitter and Facebook separately. You can just go into Hootsuite and you can send everything out at once. And then Buffer came along and Buffer had this amazing innovation where you can just put things in a queue and you don't have to manually choose for every update, you know, Tuesday at 3:00. Okay, this one's going to go Thursday at 4:00. So the queue is a great update. So what we did with Edgar is we innovated to the next level and we said, okay, queues are cool, but what if instead of your queue just disappearing, you could leverage that content that you've put into your queue over and over again? So really the inspiration came just because, you know, our company was doing this manually. We were using tools like Hootsuite and Buffer and we would fill up our queue, but then your queue runs out, right? And then you have to like do the whole process all over again. So we were storing this spreadsheet of all of our social media status updates, copying and paste them into a scheduling tool. And it was just like, why are our updates not in the scheduling tool? That just seemed really weird to me. It was like, if WordPress, you know, sends out your blog post but doesn't store it, so you can't have any access to it ever again, that's still how most social tools operate. So it was just very obvious, you know, to do, like, to take this next step that we were already manually taking with the existing software, have software do that for you instead.
That sounds like an amazing revelation that nobody else had at that time, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people were thinking it because we get a lot of customers that, it's always funny to me, we get customers that are like, I had this idea and I've been waiting for someone to build this. I'm like, I know how you feel, me too. Like, that's why I finally built it. So I think, you know, we weren't the only ones that were doing social media this way. A lot of our customers, like some of them, this is a new idea, repeating content. A lot of them were already doing this manually. So they were just like, thank you, finally someone built the tool that I've needed.
Did you do any kind of research besides scratching your own itch?
Not in the typical way. I mean, we sort of did because, like I said, we were teaching this. So, you know, people were learning this, people were implementing this strategy. So we kind of thought, okay, well, if people will pay to learn this and if people are actually doing it, you know, they'll probably pay for software to do it for them automatically. And we knew, like you said, that we really wanted it in our own business. But we didn't do the typical, we didn't do any customer interviews, or we didn't do anything like that, any of the typical lean startup stuff.
Do you do that as of today to improve your product?
Yes. I mean, not interviews because we don't need to. Like, we have such a large customer base that we get lots of feedback from our customers, which we do solicit. You know, we have things like emails set up in place to automatically get feedback from people, or when they leave, we get feedback from people. So yes, we do, you know, we don't really even need to talk to people on the phone because we have such a large customer base and we have such a good relationship with them that we hear what they love and what they don't love all the time. And it's really important feedback for us.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I think I got all my questions answered. I really love your business model and congratulations on nailing that product market audience fit. That's really amazing. So you mentioned that there is no formula for success, but for yourself and for Edgar, it has always obviously been content marketing. Mm-hmm. Or could you sum it up in a few words for us?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say, I think what's worked really well for us is being focused on a few things and doing a few things well. And this is where I see a lot of businesses going astray. So it's really hard to limit yourself to a few strategies because, it's, you know, we're all on the internet reading all these exciting articles every day about like my startup did this, my startup did that. But you just have to choose a few strategies and do them well. And the hard part is deciding what you're not going to do. So there's a lot of things we don't do at Edgar. We don't have an affiliate program. We don't do any affiliate marketing. We also don't do partnerships with other companies. You know, we don't build integrations. We actually are just about to launch a Zapier integration so that, you know, we'll be able to integrate with other tools without having to build those yourself. All manually, right?
Yes.
We don't have mobile apps. We just have a website that works well on mobile, and you can just go to the website on your phone. But we don't have mobile apps, so we don't have to have a separate Android team. We don't have to have a separate iOS team. So making those kinds of decisions for what you're not going to do, I think, is incredibly important for success.
That's an amazing formula. Thank you for sharing it. All right, Laura, can you please tell us what exact page you have set up for people to start following you immediately after they listen to our podcast?
Yeah, so you can go to meetedgar.com/podcast, and then we have some free content for you there to learn more about optimizing your social media marketing, saving a lot of time, doing it a lot more effectively. You can also find our website at meetedgar.com, Meet Edgar on Twitter and Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter at LKR.
Thank you, Laura, for joining us today. This was super valuable, and maybe all our listeners can now devise their own formulas for success.
Thank you.
Thank you, and have a wonderful day.